Welcome to a new episode of Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics or so. Each episode, I'm Siskoid, and our panelist today is Steve Givens. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hello, Siskoid. How you doing, brother?
Well, you're always game. That's one of the things I know about you. And also, you pride yourself on your ability to talk for an let's call it an inordinate amount of time on these shows. So, I mean, this sounds like the show for you, right? It's like a small thing and you get to talk about it a lot.
Yeah, but I will try to make what I have to say as succinct and to the point as possible. And, you know, I enjoy talking about the stuff I love, so I make no apologies for that. And you guys keep inviting me, so I must be doing something okay. I mean, it can't be too bad.
Not too bad. All right, so let's roll that randomizer, shall we? Our randomized series of choices, using my database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital, prior to the recording, we rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands that month, a page, and finally a panel. You know how this works. In this case, we rolled the year 2015, the month of March. Among all the comics out that month, the revolving finger falls on Silk Number 2 by writer Robbie Thompson and artist Stacy Lee, page 12 of 19, panel 1 of 3, which you'll find in the show notes, along with the page and the, you know, a bit more context at fireandwaterpodcast.com. All right, a panel from Silk, which is a Spider-Man spinoff. I will tell people not right now, lasted only 7 issues, but then Volume 2 was 19 issues, and Volume 3 was another 5 issues. This was when Marvel was renumbering every year or two, so it's hard to say how long this lasted. I guess my question is whether Cindy Moon, Silk, was on your radar at all?
Yes and no. I was aware of the character. I had some idea of who she was and, you know, kind of her connection with Spider-Man. But 2015 was an unusual year for me because I wasn't doing a lot of reading of comics at the time, at least not new comics. And so I wasn't picking this book or a lot of other new books off the shelf at the time. I think at around that time I had discovered Comixology and some other like online formats where I was going back and reading a lot of back issues. So I was knee deep in a journey of nostalgia back in 2015. So I was not doing a lot of new comics.
I was certainly reading the Spider-Man books at the time and enjoying them. Mm-hmm. So this issue of Silk was in my collection. You know, she came out of the Spider-Verse events. She had been like genetically engineered to be his mate. So they mm-hmm. really could never be together because their hormones were it made them a little crazy. But yeah, so she gets her own series. There were a lot of Spider-Man books at that time. You know, Spider-Gwen and this and sure. Scarlet Spider. You know, there are very many. This was one of them. All right. Well, we pulled a panel. It's an unusual one, I will say. And I mean, people can look at it, but maybe you can't look at anything right now because you're in a car or jogging or you are sight impaired. Who knows? Well, I'll let my guest describe the panel in as much detail as you can, Steve, please.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Well, the panel is of Silk, multiple images of Silk, entangled in what looks like metallic tentacles. The panel is interesting because it's meant to be read clockwise, if I'm understanding. Yeah. And each different image of her is a different stage of what she's trying to do to get out of the tentacles. And your eye follows, like, starting at about 11 o'clock, and you go around and around and around till you get to about 7 o'clock at the panel, the bottom left-hand corner. And she's being held upside down by what looks like the Terminator head with an A on it. And I don't know what this particular character is off the top of my head. I don't know if it's an established character or something she just fought for this particular issue. But it looks like the Terminator to me. And it is definitely trying to menace her. And she's the final thought box has her saying presto, like she has figured out how to get out. And indeed, she is slipping out of the tentacles, it looks like. That's essentially what it is. It's an interesting panel because you've got multiple. It's not just the action going on is ongoing in one panel. It's not spread out over a couple different panels. So you've got the tentacles wrapping her up, and even with the images of her like wrestling the tentacles and trying to get out of it, it's like everything is all jumbled together in a very interesting way.
And to fill in the rest of the dialogue, or it's not dialogue, it's internal monologue, she first says Houdini time, then make myself big, make it think it's got me, and then she goes presto, right? So she's upside down, sliding out of that mess of tentacles at the bottom, at the bottom of the sequence. So it's like we have the tendency to call them panels, like there's three panels in this one panel.
Yeah.
But it's all, like the rest of the page has two more panels, and it's very distinctly panel borders. In this case, it's like, I didn't know how to cut this up when I rolled it.
Well, the way you cut it up, it also looks like the tentacles are shooting out of the panel border. I'd have to look at the page as a whole to see what's going on. But the tentacles over to the right-hand side, the line where, is that where you cut it, or is that actually where the border line was?
Well, that's where I cut it, but you're right. It's inside the next panel, or it's the other panel is sort of chopped up by it because it's almost coming towards us. You know, it's breaking that fourth wall.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, yeah.
This is an old trick, right? Houdini would escape things. You just make yourself a little bigger. You blow yourself up. I see it in her face, but like she's sort of like in that second piece of the sequence. I'm going to call them images, okay? So the top image, the three images inside the panel. So the second image, she really does look like she's, you can't see her cheeks, of course, because she wears this mask, but it's like she's puffing herself up in that moment, maybe because she's surrounded by tentacles in a very circular ones. It gives you the impression of something that is blown up, and she's blown up in terms of the zoom as well on her face. So the idea is that she makes herself big, and then when it has contracted its tentacles all the way, she shrinks back down. She's a very svelte character, and she slips out upside down from those tentacles. So you can see there's like these very subtle movement lines, which I would call silky. they're very, very thin lines. So for silk, I don't know, there's thematically, I like how this whole panel, and maybe this whole issue really, is all about tendrils and strings and, you know, because she's called silk.
Absolutely.
There's something thematic there.
Although I do have a question, and this may be getting more into the context. I make myself big. Is that supposed to mean that she's just intaking air to expand herself? Or does she have, is that an ability that she has? I mean, forgive my ignorance if I'm,
When she says Houdini time, I think that she means she's using Houdini's techniques, which is just like, you fill yourself up with air, you maybe, you tense your muscles so that you take up more space. You're trapped inside something, let's say chains in his case. They seem very tight, but that's because he's flexing. And then as soon as he's in the box, he unflexes and he's out of those chains. That's what she's doing.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, she's basically Spider-Man in terms of abilities. It's very close to, she's got the spider sense and she's very agile.
Can she not shoot webs out of her fingertips? Does she have like...
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay, got it. All right.
That's something Spider-Man has done.
Got it.
Some versions of Spider-Man have done this. I want to mention the creative team at this point. Writer Robbie Thompson is actually better known for being a writer on the show Supernatural. And Stacy Lee has done a lot of work for Marvel, mostly on female characters like Silk, like Gwenpool, Spider-Gwen, America, and the Wasp. Well, I'm wondering, what do you think of this sort of manga-ish style in American superhero comics? Are you like this? Are you not like this?
There are things I really like about this panel, and there are things that I don't speak to my personal tastes. I will say that as a composition, as it's put together and composed, it's very interesting, and there's a clear way that the eye is being guided around the panel, not only because of the monologue boxes, but because of just how the images, I mean, the image, the tentacles, you know, they grow and expand and get larger. So you're immediately going from the smaller, you want to go from the smaller end of the tentacles to the larger end of the tentacles, bringing you down to that bottom corner. And so I just found that to be very interesting and wonderfully composed image there. She really knows how a reader's eye wants to flow, and she's using her art to kind of go with that. This is just a personal taste of mine. The more manga anime style of art is something that has always been a hit or miss for me. I like my adult characters to look like adults. I'm just being an old fogey that way. I don't know. This particular image is very well done and very well put together.
Yeah, I was trying to decode the composition. You know, why is it so natural to look in the right order at these elements? Obviously, context. I mean, it's very quick to look at. There's not a lot of monologuing. Even if your eye goes down to the wrong place, you know that to go back. Maybe that's part of it. And you're right. The smaller tentacles to bigger tentacles. But then it's smaller tentacles again in the third part of the sequence. Mm-hmm. The human eye is drawn to eyes, certainly. And corners. That's what I'm going to say. Because you always start at the top corner. That's normal.
Yeah.
Top left corner. Or it would be top right corner if it were manga, I suppose. And then, where are you going to go? Eyes. So we get a shot of her big eyes. That's all we see of her face, really, is the top part with that costume. So it's the big eyes. So that's where we go next. And then, well, we drop, and it's a line from that going down to the next corner, which will take us to the other two panels, which would be in the white space that I've left for you there. There are two other panels. And then we resume reading, right? There's many things, including the monologue boxes, which are going round and are easy to follow as well. So there's a lot of things going on to make us read it correctly. As far as the manga influence, I don't mind it. Different comics have different styles. I think this may play to a certain demographic as well. You know, if I go back to the credits that I gave Stacey Lee, Silk, Gwenpool, Spider-Gwen, America, Wasp, these are all female characters. They're not the only ones that she worked on, obviously, but they seem to predominantly occupy her career at Marvel. And maybe these characters are meant to elicit some female readership. And women are often more interested in manga and anime as a comic style. That's one of the reasons that comic book stores carry them and bookstores carry them. They have a huge following, especially amongst female readers.
Yeah.
If you look at the Hot Squad, with whom I work, a number of them read manga, have manga collections, but they don't read American comics, which is what makes that show, Ohadmore Not, work. They can't know too much. But they do read a lot of manga.
Sure.
And watch a lot of anime. So maybe they're trying to get those readers.
Yeah, I can speak to that as well. I have a lot of students who read manga all the time. And there are a lot of, it does attract a lot of female readers. I respect that. It has just never been a genre that I've been able to quite get into as much. Now, I've seen some things that I thought were really fantastic, but it's just never been something that has been a part of my personal taste. But looking at this and the style of it, it reminds me of the more of the YA graphic novels, especially the ones that DC has done in recent years.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have that where they're not quite manga, but they're definitely drawing about, because they're drawing stories about young characters or younger versions. I'm thinking of there was a recent Zatanna book that came out. It's supposed to be Zatanna as a young pre-adolescent or young adolescent girl. And, that type of style and look to it. I don't remember the artist, but that's when I'm looking at this panel from Silk, I'm kind of reminded of that.
Yeah, I agree. They did some Titans ones, and it's all, young adult, out of continuity books that might appeal to different kinds of readers.
Sure.
So I see it too. I agree. I think one of the strengths of a sort of manga-ish style is that the eyes are often very expressive. And that's kind of necessary for Silk because that's all you see of her face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wears this red, I say mask, but it also goes in the back. So it's kind of it's a scarf, you know, it's like the shadow.
Sure.
The shadow wears. Also, it seems, I don't know, like it almost seems like she's out of any kind of costume in the sense that post-pandemic, we're all used to this look. I was like, yeah.
Well, it's definitely an interesting look. And it, you make a good point there. It almost begs the question is, why would an artist design that kind of a mask when they're not given, because it takes away their ability to show expression on the character. Usually, you know, what gets covered up is the upper half of the face so they can leave the mouth to have that expression, you know. Of course, famously, Spider-Man has a full head covering. So, I mean, but they've always cheated by making his eyes inexplicitly like squint and things like that. Yeah. And so the artist has a particular challenge here. And I think Lee does a good job, because if you look at the eyes that are being shown, Silk's eyes, I mean, she is doing something different with each time. With her eyes and expressing different emotions. I mean, she's definitely like in that first image in the upper left corner, it looks like she is in deep thought, or she's contemplating, or she's planning. And this may be also me adding the context of the monologue box there. But also I took that, the second image is her being kind of like, not in panic mode, but just kind of like deep determination and concentration, you know, maybe a little worried or panicked about it, or, you know, just a little kind of like, you know, just giving that old heave-ho effort.
I think like the eye on the left, which would be her right eye, is kind of almost twitching. So I see that panic. I agree. Yeah. What I like is that in both cases, in the two cases that we see her face,
yeah,
the eyebrows aren't the same. It's like, it's more or less supposed to be the same moment or expression maybe, but, you know, Lee doesn't do the same eyebrow. And I especially like the topmost eyebrow on in the first image. It seems very, you know, you can almost tell that it's hair. Just the strokes that she uses, sometimes it can just be a line. But here, you know, there's just a little more texture to it.
Got it. Yeah, I definitely see that. Yeah, and like I said, this is a wonderfully composed shot. I mean, this is, very effective visual storytelling here.
And the gravity effects are something. Her hair is loose, so you can tell which way is down thanks to the hair. And then because it's tipped, you know, like that third sequence is at an angle. Obviously, the downward is actually at an angle, but there's a motion towards the corner as if we were in a tipped environment. It's not just a Dutch angle. Yeah. It's almost like, because there's water there that seems to be splashing all around, but going most towards the bottom corner. Her hair is sort of a motion that indicates sort of going towards that bottom corner. I know it's a Dutch angle and it's supposed to be flat, but the motion seems to be, it still works with, and then the monologue box is also towards that corner. So as to make your eye then read the next two panels probably.
Yeah, it's also, it's almost like your eye is being forced to slide down that edge. And everything visually, just like you said, is bringing the eye to that last corner.
What do we think of the coloring?
The coloring, the red really pops. The red of her mask and of the highlights on her gloves, her fingers, two of her fingers, it pops for me because it's up against that steely gray of the tentacles and, of course, the red eyes of the Terminator head. What is that character? Can you tell me, am I going too much into context here?
I'll give you the context.
Okay.
This is an issue in which she faces Hydra. And this is a robotic version
of an actual Hydra?
Of their logo.
Oh.
The icon. Okay. Like a skull with tentacles. That's their...
Right. I didn't even think of that. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, and this is basically that symbol.
Okay.
In 3D robotics.
Is this the first time that symbol has ever been turned into a monster like this?
As far as I know, but of course, I haven't read every Hydra story. I don't know if it happened to Nick Fury. This is a kind of clever...
Yeah, that is a brilliant idea. I had never even thought about that. But of course, it was like a head with tentacles. What is going to be like more menacing than that? You know, okay.
And I will also say about this that it, because of the tentacles, because she is a spinoff of Spider-Man, it's sort of her fighting Dr. Octopus in a way. You know, it's like Spider-Man Dr. Octopus, and then she has this in her second issue, you know, which is kind of evokes. I don't know if they were trying to just evoke different Spider-Man villains, but do it completely differently. But in this case, it's right there, you know.
Yeah, it is done differently because if every image I've ever seen of Spider-Man fighting Dr. Octopus it's very kinetic where he's moving and avoiding the tentacles and Doc Ock is trying to, you know, entangle him in some way, shape or form. Whereas I don't know how many tentacles this particular Hydra has or this monster has, but she is completely engulfed in them and has to cut her way through it, just as like she's the prince in Sleeping Beauty having to cut through the thicket, you know. Okay, interesting. I hadn't made those other connections, but that's a really good point.
And the other context, and you can see it from the colors, we're underground, we're in the sewers. So that's why there's some black, hopefully water, which is being dangled over. And then everything's like super bluish. And there's even like, that third sequence, they put the color even on the blacks. It seems to like emanate from, is it like the beam of light from the robot head? I mean, the bluish background has sort of brownish colors over it, which might be like the stink of the sewer or something. I don't know. The mouth is open. Maybe it's shooting gas at her or something. These are different things that come into my head based on just like that third piece of the puzzle.
Sure. Yeah. I hadn't noticed that about the coloring with the tentacles, but you're absolutely right. And has anything good ever happened in a sewer in the Marvel Universe? I don't know. I mean, every time somebody seems to go down in a sewer, they get into some kind of life and death battle, it seems. But
I mean, who lives down there? You know, the DC Universe has Killer Croc living down there. Marvel Universe has, I don't know, in the third Spider-Man movie, Sandman lives in the sewers.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, Mole Man probably has an escape hatch over there. The Morlocks live in the sewers. It's not a great place to live, but some do, apparently. You know, in comics more than in life, probably. I hope.
Oh, boy.
Any last thoughts on this 3-for-1?
I think I've said everything. This is an interesting enough panel for me that I would be interested in seeing the full page, if not reading the entire comic. Now, was this in a series that was, how long did this one last? Or was it meant to be an ongoing series and it just turned into a mini series? Or what's the history of this particular series?
I'm not sure what happened to Marvel. I think Secret Wars was involved in the like a shakeup and all new Marvel or something. So this is volume one. It lasts 7 issues, and then immediately it's number one and another 19, and immediately a number one and 5 more. So I think it is an ongoing. It just happened to spread over several volumes.
Got it.
Okay. Like many Marvel series at the time. So if you're interested, I'm sure it's on the Marvel Unlimited and et cetera.
Sure. And this was her first solo series?
It was.
But she also made her way into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, didn't she? Wasn't she a character in the Spider-Man? Isn't Cindy Moon?
I think maybe Cindy Moon is in there, yeah. And I think I noticed it, but
not Silk, yeah.
I'm always expecting her to show up, like, maybe in the next Spider-Verse animated movie.
Oh, that would be awesome, yeah.
Yeah, she could show up. I mean, there are a lot of people on the poster. I don't know who all the spider people are.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much for bringing me on here. I really appreciate it.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
Oh, gosh, no. I'm a lowly English teacher. You don't want me to talk about the essays and stuff that I'm grading right now. That's the only thing that I would be plugging. But I do show up on the Fire and Water Network shows from time to time. I always enjoy coming over here and talking to you guys. So I appreciate the invitation as always.
And if you enjoy Steve's delivery and thoughts, and you're on the website, you're at fireandwaterpodcast.com, look at the bottom of the podcast. There are little categories, little, you know, panel by panel is there. And probably I put Spider-Man there because there's a relationship. And you can click Steve Gibbons, and that'll take you to all his appearances on other shows.
Oh my gosh, I'm a link. I've turned into a link. Oh my gosh.
And if the other hosts, did their job, which I cannot guarantee, your name is linked to every show you've been on.
That is both gratifying and scary at the same time. I don't know why. I'm going to have to process that.
Well, I'll let you go back to the margins so you can do that. We'll listen to a short promo, and I'll come back with listener feedback on our previous episode.
Saturn, who's there? Hyperion to a Saturn. Follow Siskoid's deep scene-by-scene dive into adaptations of Shakespeare's Hamlet on Hyperion to a Satyr, the Fire and Water Network's Hamlet podcast. To listen or not to listen isn't the question. Kenneth Branagh, Derek Jacobi, Mel Gibson, Laurence Olivier, Ethan Hawke, David Tennant, Classics Illustrated, and many more covered every episode at fireandwaterpodcast.com or where you usually get your podcasts.
And now your feedback on our previous episode, which featured Paul Keen and a panel from Strange Adventures number 32, comment by comment. So Chris Franklin says, interesting discussion. This is a very captivating panel, and I dig everything you pointed out about it. I think Siskoid makes a great point. The comic artists of the Golden and Silver Ages were competent illustrators, not just of comics, but of everything. There was no comic industry before them for them to fanboy on, really, outside of the comic strips, so they learned how to draw everything they saw, and many drew them very well. They grounded the fantastical in a realism that I believe is sorely missing in many modern comics. Most current comic artists are just fans of other comic artists or the genre itself. The workmanlike talents of the old guard kept things, for lack of a better term, real. We have Captain Entropy says, intriguing panel and entertaining discussion. Thank you very much. Martin Gray says, thanks for another great episode and what a fantastic panel. At first sight, I thought it was early Carmine Infantino, but given how often Frank Giacoya worked with him, I shall forgive myself. I really like that the end isn't down at the bottom where you usually find it. Maybe it's the story jauntily drawing our eye to the mechanics of the tale in the same way we see the mechanics of the machine. Yeah, I think you're right, Martin. That jacket looks very Infantino to me, too. Like something King Faraday used to wear. Then we have Isamu Yukinori. He says, and here I thought probability zero meant the event in question would never happen. Thank you, comic book science, for setting me straight. Your podcast made me want to pull out the original comic from my dad's collection and read this story as well as the Captain Comet one. A fun read overall. I also like how the red band in the final panel also denotes a zero. Great catch, Isamu. Of course, you have the eye. We didn't notice that, I guess. And that said, before we go, we have to mention the Fire and Water Podcast Network patron page at patreon.com/FW Podcast. If you like our content, please think about making a one-time or a monthly donation to help host all of these shows. And as ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these, they're very short podcasts. Maybe you want to dip your toe, drop me a line, and we'll arrange it. You will be handed a comic book panel randomly, and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to my guest, Steve Givens, and until we refill that seat, the panel is open.